As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Instead of taking up that gym membership that you wouldn't use even if the gyms were open, how's about subscribing to The Athletic for just £4 a month? You'll get unrivaled football coverage with analysis and in-depth features from the very best writers around, exclusive Q&As with Athletic staff, and ad-free versions of all The Athletic's podcasts, including this one. Find out more and sign up today at theathletic.com/leagueshow.
There once was a team that hired Rooney. The name of the team was Derby County. They went unpaid, their heads were down. Oh, blow, my Rooney boys, blow. Soon may the Rooney men come to bring them goals at their own stadium. One day, when Wazza is done, he'll take his leave and go. They'd not been paid 2 weeks and more. The takeover had become such a bore. McLaren could help no more, and Morris was a no-show. Soon may the Rooney men come to bring us goals at their own stadium. One day, when Wazza is done, he'll take his leave and go. This is the Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power.
And that's not the weirdest thing to have happened in football this week. Glenn Hoddle was a grandfather clock on The Masked Singer. Anyway, sorry about that, folks. Producer Abby made me do this sea shanty because she likes us to have our finger on the cultural pulse. Down to business then. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, here to talk through another wild week in the EFL with my two punditry pals. Adrian Clark played for Arsenal, Southend, Stevenage and more. Now he talks to me of a Monday. Is it as fulfilling? No. Hi, Clarky.
Ahoy there, Mr. Davis-Adams.
Yeah. Sam Parkin had a rare weekend off our TV screen, so he must be chomping at the bit to do some punditry today. Is that right, Sam?
Oh, I can't wait to get going. I'm going to give 150% or whatever the modern day footballer's up to now in terms of percentages.
All right, it's time for this.
Performance of the weekend.
15 seconds a man to convince our dear listeners that their pick did the best football in the weekend just past. Adrian, you can go first. You've chosen Peterborough United. Your 15 seconds start now.
Yep, on a mud patch of a pitch, the Posh mopped up against a decent MK Don side. They couldn't live with their quick, aggressive, but fluent football. Then Dembele dazzled, Smodics remembered where the goal was, and suddenly Ferguson's men looked like automatic promotion contenders again.
Nice, good timing. Yeah, it was a good display from the Smod father in particular, I thought. Sam, you've gone for Gillingham. Your 15 seconds start now.
Yeah, 5 defeats in 6 going into the weekend, but this was a terrific away performance. Rock solid in defence and really positive going forward. Jordan Graham, a menace with his trickery, and new Southampton loanee Callum Slattery, excellent in breaking up play, starting attacks. Brilliant goal from the captain, Dempsey. Great day for the Jills.
Not so good in terms of timing, but nice content. It will shock you, listener, have gone for Nottingham Forest. My 15 seconds start now. The two-time European champions dominated Millwall on Saturday, scoring 3 times in a game for the first time this season. A beautiful brace from Sami Amiobi helping extend the good guys' unbeaten run to 7 in all comps. Forest now 6 points from trouble and a mere 21 off the automatic promotion places. See who you agree with, listener. Go to @thetotallyshow on Twitter to vote. Okay, to the championship.
RB Leipzig gift shop?
Yeah,
I want to return a player. He's not working. He was supposed to help me achieve my goals, but I don't think he even knows what a goal is.
Ah, yeah. Well, all I can say is that he was just fine working when he was to London dispatched.
Oh.
Lampard and Chelsea can't seem to get their money back, but you can with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker. If one leg of your 4+ fold Acca lets you down, get a free bet on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Min odds 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets and enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Championship headlines. Wayne Rooney finally appointed Derby County manager. More on that momentarily. Cardiff have won the race to sign Crawley hotshot Max Watters. The fee said to have reached seven figures. Bournemouth have signed Jack Wilshere on a short-term deal. As for managerial movements, the Athletic's Adam Leventhal reports that former Watford boss Vladimir Ivic was approached by Sheffield Wednesday following Tony Pulis's departure. Meanwhile, on the pitch, Norwich reached 50 points following their win over Cardiff. And across the EFL this weekend, there were 9 red cards, although there could and should have been more. Looking at you, Troy. Right, the first game we are going to look at is Derby 0, Rotherham 1. All manner of things happening at Derby County. Fortunately, the man who gets the privilege of looking after it all is coming after this sting. It's Ryan Conway of The Athletic. So, Ryan, Rooney in charge. Textbook start for a caretaker appointed on a permanent basis of a defeat in his first game. It's a 2.5-year deal. Any break clause in that for relegation?
I have no idea of the workings of the deal, to be honest. But I would imagine that if it was going that way, he'd probably just resign.
A joke,
but like, Wayne Rooney is a smart man. You know, he's not got to where he's got in his career by making dumb decisions. He's done some dumb things, you know, generally, but he's generally a smart man. I don't think he signs that deal without certain assurances of certain things. And I imagine if those things don't come his way, I don't think he'd be afraid to just be like, right, I'm out of here then.
Okay, so one of those assurances seems to have been that he'll be able to sign players. Not something that's going to be easy to do, given that Derby are currently under a transfer embargo. He must think that that's getting lifted sometime soon, and this long talked about takeover is actually going to happen. That certainly from your big piece last week, it seems as though it's going to happen any day now. But then again, we've been saying that since November. Are you still confident?
Are you asking my opinion if I'm still confident?
Yes.
No, I'm not. As an opinion, as just something that I feel personally and just as a gut feeling. No, I'm not confident. I think, you know, people talk about time. You know, Stephen Pearce was on the radio talking about timing. He was talking about everything has to be aligned and it has to be right. Rooney was saying these things can't be rushed. You know, that, you know, and as Slater put in our piece as well, you know, there might be money having to be sourced and pulled from all over the place. My issue tends to lie with the lack of communication, I think, from the club. You know, they've put out 2 statements, one confirming that takeover talks were underway, and then one 10 days before Christmas saying that they were confident it would get done before Christmas. Christmas came and went, takeover didn't happen, club didn't say anything, club didn't communicate anything. That's bad. You have to do that. You just have to do that. You know, the players not being paid. If you thought that, I mean, you know, if you thought you had the money, so you didn't have to source it from anywhere else or pull it from anywhere else, then there should have been, you know, no issues. The players should have been paid. As of right now, not all of them have been paid their full wage. So there were just, with everything that they go, oh, it's about time, and it's about time, it's about this, it's about that. There are things you point to and go, but what about this? What about that? Why is this happening then? What's going on over here? There are a lot more red flags starting to crop up. And look, if it goes through, then all right, I'll have egg on my face. But personally, I just don't feel that confident.
Mel Murray's still the name above the door for the moment. He's got a personal fortune of £515 million. Would it not have been in his interest, in the interest of the takeover and the football club, for him to just cover the missing wages himself? Or am I being extremely naive and unrealistic to think that was even an option?
I think a little column A, a little column B. I think, because I think the longer this goes on, I think, you know, Mel would eventually step in. I think he'd have to at some point, because I believe the EFL can charge Derby if players go unpaid for a certain amount of time. So I think he would step in and pay everybody. Now, the way I understand it is, you know, that's Mel's worth, but it's not just like sat in some kind of Scrooge McDuck vault, you know, it's all in assets and stuff like that. And I think that's what, you know, a lot of wealthy people say when you look at their net worth and, you know, they go, well, it's not just cash that's lying around, it's all in assets. You know, but there is a cash flow problem at Derby, as evidenced by the loan, a second loan that they're trying to take out with MSD, as evidenced by the first loan they took out with MSD, as evidenced as far back as 2018 when they sold their stadium to themselves. You know, people can frame that any way they want. My argument will always be, if financially you're in a healthy position, you don't have to sell your stadium to yourself.
I want to get back to Rooney and something that caught my eye from your latest piece about his criticism of Dwayne Holmes in particular, not in the squad for Saturday's game, rumoured to be off to Huddersfield. Thought it was interesting that he chose to publicly criticise him, saying that, you know, his training wasn't up to scratch, etc. It's a bold move for a manager to criticise a player in public. Do you think he's thinking, well, this guy's going out the door anyway, this is a good opportunity to show the rest of the squad that I'm not their mate anymore, that I am the boss, and, you know, kind of bare his teeth a little bit?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. As I understand it, Dwayne Holmes will be a Huddersfield player within the next 24 hours. Now, I think if you've got a player like that, that is so, it's so obvious that they are leaving and you can dig them out, there are no negative repercussions for you from that player. You know, you can dig them out. He's done it before with Jack Marriott. He did that with Jack Marriott after his debut when he was a player. There is a completely ruthless side to Rooney. You know, I think evidenced by his first game as sole interim manager, where he made like 7 changes and it was pretty much all the experienced lads coming in. But yeah, I think when you know, Dwayne had been out of the squad for a few games, and he was, you know, he was fit. And I think it says a lot about where he was in the pecking order that Rooney was choosing to put 16-year-old Cade Gordon on the bench. Now, he's meant to be the truth, you know, he's meant to be that good, but he's 16. On a team that doesn't have an awful lot of depth, when he's making the bench and a fit Dwayne Holmes is just being left at home, that, you know, you don't have to say that you don't fancy him. The fact that you just don't pick him, even in your 18-man squad, says an awful lot.
What about Liam Rossignol? Because we know that he wanted the gig that Rooney's got. Do you think he'd be happy to stay on as an assistant?
I mean, in many ways, you know, it's a promotion, isn't it? He's gone up from coach to assistant manager. But, you know, I think, like Wayne, he wanted to be a number one. If that opportunity came calling, I don't think he'd say no. I don't think he could say no, you know, to get your first job in management. He would never say it publicly, but privately, I imagine he's got to be disappointed that he didn't get the job. How could you not be, you know, in a professional environment like that? But I suppose if you're ever the optimist as Liam is, you look at it and go, well, you know, it's a promotion to assistant manager. It's a start, I guess.
Last one then, Ryan. Now, as we sit here, January, do you think Derby have got what it takes to stay up? And does it all hinge on the takeover getting done this month so that they can bring some new players in?
I think they've got enough to stay up. But it's going to be so tough, because I think you look at Rotherham and Wickham as the two, I'm not going to say they are going to go down, but they are the two favourites to go down. And the rest, when you look at in and around Derby, you look at Derby, Sheffield Wednesday, Nottingham Forest, can even throw Birmingham in there. They're all kind of much of a muchness as a team. And that's, you know, that's dangerous, because you don't look at any one of them squads and think, yeah, they'll pull away, you know, in the second half of this season. But Derby have got good players. You know, they have got good. David Marshall's a very good goalkeeper. You know, Nathan Byrne is a really good right back. Bielik is playing really good stuff at the minute in the centre of midfield. Jason Knight too. Graham Shinney as well. Put all that midfield in there. Jóźwiak, I fully believe Jóźwiak will be a star in the Championship. He has consistency issues right now, and he gets frustrated too easily. And you could say the same about Tom Lawrence on the other side. But make no mistake, these are good players. They're quality players. you know, it's a squad that is definitely capable of getting them out of there. Now, they don't have an out-and-out goal scorer. You're going to have to share the wealth a little bit and spread those goals around. But they're definitely capable.
Ryan, you're an optimist. That's why we love you. Thanks for joining us today. We'll speak to you again soon, no doubt.
No, don't worry about it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Ryan Conway there, the man who drew the short straw from The Athletic. To the game then, chaps. Rotherham had one ruled out. Bielik should have been sent off. Derby left ruining their own crumminess. Was it a fair result though, Adrian?
I think it was a fair result, yeah. As you point out, they had a goal disallowed in the first half. Marginal offside call. It was difficult to tell whether he was on or off. But no, I think that Rotherham were good value for their win. And Derby just weren't at it. It was a sloppy performance. Concentration levels not there. Careless in possession. Interesting, wasn't it, that Rooney made Jason Knight his captain at just 19 years of age. So that was a fascinating decision on his part. But as for the performance, it was a bit of a damp squib. But should we be surprised, really? You look at the season as a whole, the lowest scorers, 14 in 23, five at home all season. And I've dug a little bit deeper. In the 12 home games that Derby have had so far, which totals 540 minutes plus, they've scored once. One second half goal at home all season, and we're pretty much at the halfway stage. That's embarrassing. And it shows you that Wayne Rooney's got a lot of work to do to get them out of the relegation zone.
Sam, the pure of heart amongst us will be feeling faint at all this talk about Derby County, so we ought to give some praise to the Millers. It seems like every time we mention Rotherham, it's will they, won't they stay up? But in terms of a performance, this was particularly impressive for a struggling team, no?
Yeah, really good performance. And I think we've spoken a few times about them getting plaudits for always being in games and pushing some of the top sides but not getting the results. But no, I thought they were good value, and Wayne Rooney said as much after the game. Could have been further in front. Obviously, Wood had that goal disallowed. I think it was rightly called offside for the initial pass before Hwikwe tried to flick one to him. So, no, they've got a nice balance in midfield. Obviously, Barlasser, we've spoken about often on the podcast during his previous loan. Crooks and Smith, always a threat. And I think at the weekend, the pitch probably suited them. Paul Warren probably won't want to focus on that. But I thought the pitch probably stopped Derby from being able to play. Bielik was their one shining light until, obviously, he had to be withdrawn. And that usual lack of creativity in Derby's ranks was really evident. And that's where they've fallen short this season. He's shored them up defensively. But, yeah, that's a big problem, the inability to put teams away. And I thought Wayne Rooney a little bit slow with his substitutions as well. So there was a bit of an inevitability, I would say, about that outcome, considering that Rotherham have done it time and time again, really. Spoilt the party. So, yeah, good result for them. But, you know, Derby's squad clearly isn't good enough, and clearly not good enough in forward areas and needs big surgery, I would suggest.
Let's head to the seaside next, or just 1.7 miles from it, to be precise. A big win for Luton, who saw off 10-man Bournemouth. The red card in the first half for Jefferson Lerma, probably the key moment of the game. It's since been overturned. I'll put you on the spot here, Clarkie. It's just kind of indicative of a pretty low standard of refereeing in the Championship, because I can't understand for one moment why this was deemed to be a red card.
Yeah, I don't think the standard of officiating in across English football is great at the moment. I mean, I've been crying out for ages for the Premier League to sort of kick out half of their current crop and bring through the next generation. But fans that watch the EFL and the Championship say, well, they're just as bad, if not worse, at our level. So yeah, I think there's an underlying problem with the quality of officiating. I think we need to get more ex-footballers, really. And I'm not talking about players that have had long careers. I'm talking about guys that have maybe come out of the game at 17, 18, 19, out before they've started. It's a way in. It's quite a lucrative career, isn't it, of course, being a top-flight official. And if there's a way we can encourage these guys to, those that fancy it, of course, to get on the training wheel and to be ready by the time they're in their mid to late 20s, then I think that will make a difference. Because for me, there's not that many of the referees seem to understand the finite details of footballers. And I think most ex-pros, I'm sure Sam would agree, could see first up, you didn't need a replay to know that that wasn't a red card from Lerma. I think he saw the blood and thought, oh, wow, that's a bad one. I'm going to give him a red. And you can't guess at these things. You're playing with people's livelihoods and careers. So, yeah, that was a shocking call.
How about Luton, though, Sam? We ought to give them some praise. On to 33 points. Nathan Jones doesn't like harping on about having a bottom two budget, he said, harping on about the fact that he's got a bottom two budget. But he's doing a sensational job there. And it's one of those pairings that just seemed to go. You know, he didn't have him for him at Stoke, but him and Luton are like a perfect match.
Yeah, I know you're scared of Alex Neil, Matt, and I know he's your mate, Clarky, but I'm really scared of Nathan Jones, to be honest. He looks like he's going to like jump on the interviewer and like smash up the camera. It's like, it's frightening. Does he ever mellow? Does he ever plateau? Or is that him full blast, Adrian? Because I'm really not sure about him.
He's an intense lad. He is an intense character, that is for sure. There's anyway. Only one Nathan Jones, let me tell you. He's a unique personality.
Yeah, on the game, I thought defensively, got it spot on, made a change, went to five at the back. Glenn Rea actually popped in the middle of the two centre-halves, had to reshuffle when the Lockyer had to go off. I think Potts went to left-sided centre-half and Naismith came on. But a really good defensive display, some top performances. Sluger, who we slaughtered week after week last season, was brilliant, made some big saves. And Dewsbury Hall is really standing out in terms of a player who can get you assists and get you goals. I think two goals and two assists in the last four, and they are absolutely loving him, the supporters. You know, one of the best players they've had in recent memory. So, yeah, I completely agree with you, Matt, because when you look at the players at his disposal, to continue to pick up consistent results is frightening in the second tier. So I think they need a little bit more firepower. I don't think Collins can continue to carry that mantle throughout a championship season. So I'd like to see them maybe add one more there, but I've been saying that for a long time and they still seem to get by. So yeah, credit to him. It was a great result. And I think just a rare off day for Bournemouth, who will come again. That said, they're not scoring goals at the moment. I think just four in the last six games.
Yeah, Nathan's mixed up his formations better, I think, in this spell. They're certainly not that they were ever predictable, because teams couldn't really handle them in League One with this 4-4-2 diamond. But yeah, I think that's the sixth time he's gone to three at the back, and they've done it pretty well. He's picked and chose the right games to go with the back three, where they can maybe use the pace of Harry Cornick on the break, and that definitely stood out in this game, as well as obviously that. The lovely left foot of Dewsbury Hall.
Bournemouth then, Adrian, dropped 4 points from two home games over the past week. They've only won one of their last five in the league. Should they be worried? And is Jack Wilshere the answer to the question that's being posed of them?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think they should be overly worried. Jack's been training there, hasn't he? So he's obviously looked sharp. That's the only reason I can think. And he's a good player. He's obviously a wonderful talent. I just feel that they've got a lot of central midfielders already. Tons, actually. I think they've got a lot of centre-halves. Maybe just not enough creators. It's a difficult one. You look at their... So in that sense, I guess Jack Wilshere does tick the right box. I'm more thinking about creators in forward areas like David Brooks, who there's a huge reliance on. At the moment, they've gone for back three. 3-4-3, which sort of only leaves you with two central midfielders. So you do wonder whether he's going to get any game time. But once Dan Juma comes back, they'll probably go to a four at the back again. But yeah, it's I don't think it's time to panic if I was a Bournemouth fan, but definitely in a little bit of a rut at the moment.
To the world-famous City Ground, then. Forest seeing off Millwall in relatively comfortable fashion. I've been allocated my 15 seconds to espouse the virtues of the Reds. If you want to hear more than that, have a listen to Two Stars. That's the Forest pod from The Athletic. On Millwall, though, we've mentioned their lack of goals before, but problems at the other end too. Only one clean sheet in 10. Sam, were you the chairman? Would your finger be hovering over the metaphorical trigger, or would you be paraphrasing the Kaiser Chiefs and singing, "I would stick with Rowett"? Stick with Gary Rowett.
If I was the chairman sitting in a director's box with a full den every Saturday afternoon when they're getting beaten, then I probably would be getting close to pulling the trigger. But in these circumstances at the moment, I really hope not. I hope he's given an opportunity to build. I think Gary Rowett, I think if he's afforded the opportunity to bring in some players in January and they don't see an upturn, then of course there'll be question marks about his job in the summer at the end of the season, because the form is dreadful. It's woeful. One win in 15, and it all flipped on that home defeat against Huddersfield, if you remember, 3-0, where I think that actually flattered Huddersfield on the day, but they've only scored more than one goal once in that run of games in the victory at Bristol City. So it is really desperate. Scratching around. I saw that he played Zahor, Wallace and young Parrott as well, and just nothing really. Zahor was really poor, and you know, the fans, you know, question if it's right to continue going with these lone players if the performances are going to be so lackluster. And I think Jed Wallace has to take a portion of the blame right now, because he's not producing either. Just one goal and one assist in the last 10, and the goal was a penalty against Coventry the other week. So now problems all over the place really for Millwall. But again, I just think maybe going back to the youth, Thompson, McNamara, who's come back from St Johnstone, giving those two a bit of an opportunity and some new blood in January, and hopefully be able to turn things around. But it's not looking good. But I don't see them getting dragged down into the relegation fight.
No, Sam made a good point. I think, was it last week or the week before, talked about potentially ripping up that defence that's been so dependable for them in recent seasons. I think that's a difficult situation, a difficult call that probably has to be made, really. Sometimes you've got to make these tough decisions, because the clean sheets have dried up big time. There's too many mistakes at the back. Also, Sam, I wanted to ask you this. Do you think that a club can ever have too many strikers? Now, I say this because Millwall have kind of got six. If you include Jed Wallace as part of a forward line, you got Parrott, 7 starts, Bradshaw, 8, Matt Smith, 5, Bodvarsson, 7, Zahor, 3. It feels like none of them are getting any kind of rhythm. They're sort of in and out. And very rarely does he ever play more than one striker. Often it's Bradshaw sort of in behind Bodvarsson, or Parrott to the left, or something like that. Just seems to me he's got 6 strikers, and there's only really room for one proper striker in his setup. Should he get rid of some, or go with 2 up top?
Yeah, he'd probably say that he's afforded all of them enough opportunities while he's been scratching around trying to find the right combination. I think I said like a fortnight ago, I thought Bodvarsson and Bradshaw had performed well in the game prior to the Coventry one away from home. And there were signs that it was coming together, and then they were so lackluster again on during that display that he's almost ripped it up and started searching around again. So,
but like too much choice, maybe.
I think the fans are crying out for that. And I think my point was, you know, when you had Morrison and Gregory in tandem playing up there week after week, you always have a chance, especially in the home game. So, yeah, maybe that's something he has to look at. But it doesn't look like anyone he's got at the moment is the answer. So I expect him to be backed, because I thought the squad was a little bit lacklustre going into this season. And the way that Gary Rowett wanted to progress things, he'd probably say that he's been a little bit shortchanged. So I think, I hope, they bide their time with him, the hierarchy, and he gets a bit more time.
Let's get some odds, courtesy of Paddy Power, here represented by Abby. We're going to build a midweek acca on the basis that one week it'll surely come off. Abby, you're making a selection for us this week. It comes from the Championship, I believe.
Yes, and I'm very much taking that one day it will come off to heart. And so I'm going for what must be a surefire, right? Norwich to beat Bristol City. And those odds are 4-7.
Well, playing it safe. We'll carry on with that as the show progresses.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis Adams.
Let's have a look at some transfers, though, that have happened since last time we met. Max Waters to Cardiff, we mentioned this already. 13 and 15 for Crawley this season. Adrian, can he make the step up? And do you think Neil Harris's job depends on him doing so to some extent?
Well, yeah, I don't know whether Neil Harris will get enough time to see the benefit of the signing, the way that the form is going. You know, he talked up how proud he was of the performance at the weekend. But it felt like the cries of a coach that was sort of desperate to be positive, even though they were you know, a distant second best to Norwich, really, I thought, anyway. So they're not in good shape. And I think I really like Neil Harris. I think he is a good manager, but he must be on the line. It feels like, not a desperate signing, but it feels like a bit of a stretch, a bit of a gamble. Because let's face it, this lad has played half a season in League Two for a very attack-minded side and done brilliantly, no question. He's been sharp as anything, scored some great goals, but it's half a season. He's never you know, proven himself at that level. He could be the next Jamie Vardy. We don't know, do we? But it feels like they're clutching a little bit with this signing. And Crawley, I would imagine Crawley, although gutted to lose him, to make that kind of profit in such a short period of time is an absolute no-brainer for a player that could turn out to be a flash in the pan.
Ben Whiteman to Preston from Doncaster. A few clubs looked at him. Preston got it done. Should cheer Alex Neil. We've spoken previously about how he's not been massively backed in the transfer market. Sam, I'm sure this one caught your attention. Bright Asseyi Samuel signed a pre-contract to join Mesut Ozil at Fenerbahce. QPR say he'll stay with them for the rest of the season unless the clubs can reach an agreement for his early release. You want to try and do that, don't you? Because you don't want a player whose mind's going to be elsewhere for the second half of the season.
What, you want him to? They want him. You want him to strike up an agreement?
Yeah, wouldn't you think so? Is he not just going to be worried about getting injured and his mind will be wandering to Turkey rather than London?
Yeah, quite possibly. I think in the summer everyone was a little bit concerned about his attitude, and he's done really well in the last couple of months, I would say. Been some good performances, but yeah, it seems a little bit strange. If Mark Warburton got his eye on someone, there's been rumours about a couple of players already, then maybe it'd be better to get it done. But he's been a good player. Shame to see him go, as it was to see Eze go. Yeah, I wouldn't put him on the same level as Eze, though. So yeah, we wish him well, and yeah, hopefully QPR will be able to add to the squad and have a better go of the second half of the season.
From his perspective, Clark, it's always good to see a young player try their luck abroad, but also, presumably, he'll be getting a nice bump in wages if they're not having to pay a fee for him, so you can understand why he's gone for it.
Oh, look, cha-ching, isn't it? I mean, if they've just signed Mesut Ozil, they've got a lot of money. I think that much is clear. So yeah, Bright Asseyi Samuel, he wouldn't have been short of suitors from the Premier League. I'm not saying they'd have been queuing up to sign him, but because he's a free transfer, he would have got himself a very, very good deal to stay in English football. So, yeah, I can only imagine it's sort of mind-boggling money that's turned his head. But also, it's good to have the experience of playing abroad. And he's a showman. He's a very exciting player, and I think they'll love him over there. But those that go over to Turkey, they don't tend to stay that long. It's quite intense over there, and if things don't go well in Turkish football, especially when fans are inside the stadiums, then it can be one of the most difficult countries in the world to be a professional footballer. So let's hope he can shine and deliver there. But I don't think he's going to be there forever. He'll be back in England in 2 or 3 years, I'd imagine.
The Athletic Stuart James reporting that Swansea close to bringing in Jordan Morris on loan from Seattle Sounders. Sam, you're our MLS correspondent and you rate this player.
I think I've sat on the fence quite a lot today, so I'm going to go all in here. All in. I'd be really excited if I was a Swansea supporter. First saw him probably 3 years ago. He had a really bad injury, but since he's been back fit, he's been outstanding. He's an amazing athlete, very powerful, direct runner. Played in a 4-2-3-1 for Seattle, wide on the left-hand side, normally coming in field or running in beyond. Seen him play as a number nine, can play wide right as well, gets goals. But I just think these physical attributes would be really suited to the championship. Obviously, my one concern in what I've just said is the way that Swansea set up, which is pretty set in stone. The 3-4-1-2. Not a number 10, because he wouldn't be comfortable receiving it on the half turn and little passes. That's not his game. So he'd have to play as a striker as an alternative to Jamal Lowe with Andre Ayew, I would imagine, which he could do no problem at all. But yeah, he's better in a 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3 in a wide position. But his age, 26, I think he's got number of USA caps, and it has worked in the past. You think of Landon Donovan, wasn't it? It was great. Well, you look at Alfonso Davies at Bayern Munich, for example. And I know the Almiron one at Newcastle hasn't quite worked. But this lad, when I've watched him in MLS, I thought, surely someone in Europe's going to take a chance on him. So yeah, I'd be really excited.
While we're with you, Sam, last one. Charlie Brown from the Chelsea dev squad to MK Dons. We've seen a bit of him playing under 23 football, etc. Do you think he can cut it in League One? Is he just going to be back up to Cameron Jerome?
I'm getting back on the fence. you never know, do you? You never know. I made a hash of the Conor Gallagher one a couple of years ago when Johnny Jackson asked me about him. I'm not sure. And I actually mentioned another lad that Chelsea had in the 21s, and obviously he went on to be a revelation. So until they're afforded the opportunity, how do you know? You can't gauge it against under 23 football. I honestly don't believe it. So in the Checker Trade games or Papa John's, he's done brilliant. Love his movement on the last line. Really intelligent the way he gets in. Great finisher in the 18-yard box. Really strong left foot. Got a good goal return at every level with Chelsea. I'm just be concerned about his hold up and his physicality, because I think that started to let him down in the last year. Maybe he hasn't developed as quickly as maybe we anticipated. Not, I don't mean physical, I mean in terms of his footballing ability. So training with first team players, playing in a first team environment, I have to wait and see how he gets on. But if he can improve that, he can improve his awareness with his back to goal and be a better link, then hopefully he can go and do well. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
So he's going to be in League One and we'll meet him there in a jiffy.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
League One headlines. Shrewsbury boss Steve Cottrell recovering in hospital, having been admitted to intensive care following a positive COVID test. Get well soon, Steve. On the pitch, Hull missed the chance to close the gap on leaders Lincoln, who didn't play this weekend. The Tigers drew with Blackpool. The teams in third to seventh all won, with Sunderland moving up to eighth following their victory. And we're big fans of Jimmy Floyd's face mask / chin warmer. Let's start our look back at Fleetwood, where Portsmouth claimed 3 points in a fifth clean sheet in a row, courtesy of a 1-0 win. Pompey haven't played since December the 18th. Fleetwood, their first match under interim manager Simon Wiles. We all picked Pompey to go up in our predictions the other week, Clarkie. What is there that can stop them, do you think? I guess injuries, COVID running through the club, that kind of thing. But in terms of on the pitch, they're looking terrific.
They do. They just look really solid, don't they? Five clean sheets in a row would kind of testify. I think it's the same with any team. Injuries. I think that is the only thing that can really derail them. And will they score enough goals? If they start to leak a few, have they got the firepower to go and win games, you know, 3-2, 4-2, whatever? We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, just really consistent this season. Obviously playing better football. The fans are enjoying that. We've talked about it. They're pressing more. They're passing through the lines. It's better to watch. Andy Cannon's been good in central midfield alongside Naylor. Again, if they miss out, if one or both are missing, have they got the backup there? I saw them. I went to Peterborough for the Papa John's game. It was obviously their reserve team, but they were comprehensively outplayed. And in midfield, Ben Close was playing. And although good deliveries from set pieces in general play, he was second best. So yeah, I think if the first 11 stay fit, they'll be okay. But maybe they just need someone to take the weight off of Marquis, who's back on the goal scoring trail in this game.
Sam, I'm looking at the odds for next Fleetwood manager. Odds on Tim Cahill. I mean, it's sort of out of the Barton mould, I suppose, in that it's a rookie. Is that what they need? Should they not be going for a bit more experience this time round?
I think the chairman, is he an Evertonian? He certainly pals with Joey Barton, wasn't he?
I think he might be, yeah.
Tony Hibbert, 3-1. No, I just made that.
So, I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Tim Cahill's getting a lot of punditry work, isn't he? But maybe he'd be hungry to get into the management game, and that would be a perfect place, wouldn't it, with good tools in terms of a good, great setup, well-run club, a good side who just lost its way a little bit at the start of this season. I think defensively it took a while to get them going, but there didn't seem to be too much wrong with that performance at the weekend in terms of territory and pressure. As Adrian said, just came up against a good, well-oiled Portsmouth machine at the moment. We didn't have much of the ball, but get the job done. So it's a really good job for someone. I think given the way that the chairman went previously, it wouldn't surprise me if he went for another young supporter, because I think it's still about building Fleetwood as a league club, building the interest, building the support base, etc., and improving the brand of football. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was something similar.
Isn't it the perfect time to appoint a rookie, Matt, really? I mean, they're not going to go down. Absolutely no chance. Could go up if things kickstart, because they've got decent players and they play some lovely football. In this match, they played some really good stuff between the lines. So I think it's the perfect... If you're inclined to go with someone that's a bit of a name, that's young and fresh, that could turn out to be the next big thing, this is the perfect time. Give them half a season to build things up. Doesn't really matter what happens. And kick on potentially next year.
Abby points out that Jonathan Woodgate, who's not quite a rookie, is 25-1. But if we're going ex-Evertonians instead, I'd give it to Daniel Amakachi till the end of the season. Two teams heading in opposite directions met at Wimbledon's not yet happy new
home. Matt, I've got to say, Matt, sorry. They should give it to David Unsworth. Do you remember Joey Barton? Joey Barton giving Unsworth pelters for being fat.
He's probably still in charge of Everton's under 23s, I think, David Unsworth. Anyway, where was I? Wimbledon 0-3 Sunderland. Two teams heading in opposite directions meeting at Wimbledon's not yet happy new home. Sunderland didn't draw this game. Charlie made of the white stuff to get a hat trick. Plough Lane seems to be a bit slow becoming a happy home for them, Adrian. Is there a reason for that, or are we just reading too much into that and actually they've not got a very strong squad, hence why they've lost four on the bounce and are in the relegation zone?
Nah, nothing to do with the stadium. It looks great, by the way. I really like it. I can't wait for fans to be inside there. No, I just feel Wimbledon are short on defenders, aren't they? I think the manager, Glyn Hodges, said he's only got three fit centre-halves, doesn't have a lot of experience in his team, full stop, does he? And I just feel that they were sort of out-noused a little bit in this game, and also probably the gap in quality, as they should be really, given the budgets at Wimbledon and Sunderland. I think that was exhibited for much of the match, quite even. Wimbledon had their moments. I quite like Longman's good. He's bright, and we know that Piggott's a quality player, but yeah, just in central midfield and at the back, they were opened up at key times. They scored some good goals, I thought Sunderland. The stats aren't good. Obviously, six losses out of the last seven games. The other game was drawn, so they're in rotten form. But I don't think this was a rotten performance. I really don't.
Sam, Lee Johnson said all he wanted in the second half was an A-grade attitude from his players. We've had a light-hearted dig at that kind of statement from him before, but he's looking more and more like a really good appointment from Sunderland. He seems to have found a way to make them click.
Yeah, well, they were so incensed and bored of the previous regime. I think they're just thrilled to see a bit of tactical flexibility, I would suggest, and kind of went 4-2-2-2, 4-4-2, kind of in that Watford style when they were getting great success a couple of seasons ago, and made some big decisions. O'Brien started and Embleton over Jack Diamond, who's been really good, and both of those two contributed hugely to the victory. Charlie White, brilliant hat-trick, proving that he can, you know, be a consistent scorer, and also Jordan Willis at the other end, who has been missing. I think they were really secure when he was in the team previously, so getting him back at the other end is vital as well. So a really good performance, and I think for Wimbledon, just to add to what Clarkie said, I think there has been interest in Joe Piggott, and there'll continue to be interest in the next couple of weeks, so vital that they keep hold of him, as well as improving defensively if they're, you know, not going to be looking over their shoulders.
Let's move on to the most entertaining side in the EFL just now. That's Rochdale. 3-3 draw with Wigan for them. The last three games, 3-3, 4-4, 3-3. George Ellick caught up with their manager, Brian Barry Murphy, on Thursday's show to discuss Dale's form. Do listen to that if you haven't already. In terms of Saturday's game, summed up nicely by Stevie Humphreys, Caps, again, unreal spirit from the boys to come back twice from behind with 10 men to get a 3-3 draw. At Beasley underscore Jake, bravest guy I know, great goal, mate. That's why we call you Bex, flame emoji, at Ryan MCL2. Buzzing to get another couple of goals and help the boys. Football emoji, hashtag up the Dale, blue heart emoji. Sam, you were there for the 4-4 with Charlton midweek. I'm sure you had an eye on this one too. Are you enjoying their free scoring, no defending style of play?
Yeah, it's the best game I've seen by a country mile at Charlton. It was amazing. Loved it. And I wouldn't say it was a criticism, but I came away and during the second half just thinking, they're 4-2 up here. They're getting battered. Why is he not bringing on another centre half and just declaring? Like, I mean, there comes a time when you just got to say, let's put five across the edge of the box, you know, some midfielders on their toes, and just make it really hard for the opposition. And it wasn't until after the game that I heard his comments that Paul McShane got injured in the warm-up. He literally had no options on the bench. And then fast forward to Saturday, centre-half gets sent off. And Jimmy Keohane, who is a... Well, he was an attacking midfielder player when I played with him at Exeter, went into centre-half. So they've got, like, enormous issues defensively. Hence why I think... It's partly the philosophy, but partly because of circumstances, they just go and try and outscore teams, which is just brilliant fun. The young lad Barr obviously was exceptional at Charlton. Humphreys, brilliant target man who is getting goals, and he's been equally well aided by Lund, who's actually playing as a number 10. We did it at the Valley as well. So, yeah, they're just really good fun. I felt that... They were going to shut up shop in the second half at the Valley, but they did the opposite. They kept four up at times, which was just brilliant. And at the weekend, despite being really patched up against Wigan, great resilience, loads of energy and youthful exuberance, and real quality as well. So, yeah, they're going to have to improve defensively. Otherwise, it might not have a happy ending. But, yeah, it's really good fun at the moment.
As for Wigan... Adrian, obviously disappointed here to concede so late, but they've only lost once in the last seven. That was the 5-0 hammering in the reverse between these two. Doing pretty well to still be in touching distance of safety, aren't they, given all the tumult around them this season?
I think so, yeah. I think the sort of joint interim managers, Liam Richardson and Greg Arrieach, are doing a great job. They talk about the spirit of Rochdale, that's evident. I mean, that was a great comeback with 10 men. They've come back, you know, from other deficits as well lately. But Wigan have got a bit of character as well, and some talent. 19-year-old Carl Joseph, for example, is a player that's come to come to form, four goals in the last two. And I notice, and this is inevitable, as soon as anyone half decent does well for Wigan, they're going to be preyed on. But I've noticed there's a long list of clubs interested in Kyle Joseph. So he might be another one that ends up going. But yeah, full credit to them and to their academy as well. Of the 14 players that featured in this game, 9 were graduates of the Wigan Academy. So yeah, that's a great ratio, isn't it? I know it's been forced upon them, but they're being competitive. So these kids that are coming through, clearly good players, but also players with character as well.
Yeah, keeping them going at the moment. Let's get back to the Acca. My selection for our midweek bet comes from League One. Abby, I'd like over 3.5 goals in the game between Peterborough and Charlton, please. What odds will Paddy Power give me on that?
You see why I've had to go for Norwich as my selection with your mad madness. Peterborough versus Charlton, over 3.5 goals is 11-5. Put that together with my 4-7 from Norwich, and we are currently on 4-1.
Good stuff. Let's get to League Two next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
League Two headlines. Plenty of relegation six-pointers this weekend, but Barrow were the only side to take 3 of them in the bottom half. In fact, Leighton Orient, the only other team in League Two to win at the weekend. Means it's incredibly tight, just 5 points between 1st and 9th, with another 5 between 18th and 24th. Lots of draws in League Two. The pitches far from perfect. Is there anything to read into that, Adrian? Do you think that there are loads of draws?
I don't think it's to do with the pitches. It was the most boring weekend maybe in League Two history, wasn't it? Let's not pull any punches here. It was shocking. I wish I'd bet under 2.5 goals in every game. I needn't turn up for this podcast if I'd done that. I don't know. Is it fatigue? Is it lockdown fatigue? I mean, I have to say, and I love football, really love it, and I'll always watch it when I have time to, but it's not as much fun at the moment. And the fact that it's behind closed doors must be getting to the players. It just feels like it's a training game. They're not training games. We know that, they know that, but it just has that feel of a dead match. It's a little bit soul-destroying, and I just wonder whether there's a lethargy across the division, really. And obviously there's been huge disruption as well through players getting COVID, opponents getting it, and then they're having to have breaks. So no one's getting into any kind of flow at the moment. So I think it's a cocktail between those, really. The bad pitches, that's there every year. It's a real shame. I felt when we had 1,000, 2,000 fans in, it was starting to really pick up, and it's a real choker that we've gone backwards.
Yeah, Sam, you go to a lot of these games behind closed doors. Have you noticed the kind of enthusiasm, maybe the quality, maybe the intensity dropping over these last few months? Difficult to say when you've just been and watched a 4-4 the week before,
yeah,
I suppose.
I mean, that's given me a real necessary pick me up, to be honest, because I've been really struggling with the Premier League games as a spectator on the TV. I can't tell you that I've sat through 90 minutes of any game, really. When you get there, in terms of being a commentator, co-commentator, as you two guys know, you focus in on the tactics and on the skill and all that, and you go into game mode, and that is still as much I wouldn't say it's as much as a thrill as always, because obviously the atmosphere always brings the spectacle up a notch. But I'm really enjoying getting out to the games. What you do miss, I suppose, and what is evident, is you don't get those big spells in games. I've said this consistently, when the goalkeeper's getting peppered and the box is getting peppered and you can smell the goal coming. That's the biggest thing that I'm missing and the biggest obvious gap that I'm seeing. So potentially that the players will be struggling with that. We're struggling without having an atmosphere to feed off, negative or positive. Sounds and chants from the crowd always heightens your senses and did when I was a player and inspired me. So, in terms of me going there, I think it's a little bit different because your game face comes on, doesn't it? And you can focus on just being at a game of football rather than being in the house and watching, I suppose, a product that's a little bit sub what we're used to it being at the moment.
Anyway, let's talk about some League Two games. Barrow 1, Scunthorpe 0. Barrow, the big winners from the weekend. Their goal coming from Josh Kay. Concerning concussion for Luke James, 15 minutes of stoppage time. It looks as though he's okay, thankfully. Barrow's first win since Boxing Day. Clark, have you noticed much difference in how they're going about things under Michael Jolly as opposed to David Dunn?
Don't know, a bit more flexibility tactically. I think they started with a back three and then after James came off, it went to 4-4-2. They still play some lovely possession football. Yeah, some really well-constructed moves. They used the full width of the pitch via those wing-backs. But what impressed me actually about them in this game was the goal. But the goal was a really direct piece of play. It was go from one end of the pitch to the other as quick as you can. Really smart counter, beautifully taken. So, yeah, I think they'll be fine. Look, Barrow's home form is strong. They've only lost twice up there in Cumbria, and that I think will save them come the end of the season. I know that the league position is a little bit precarious, but I think they've got enough goals in them to get themselves up towards mid-table. I really do.
Scunthorpe, Sam, another defeat for them. They've had 8 managers since 2018. Will they get their cocks out in a bid to stay up?
No, I wouldn't think so. I think just going over what we've said already on today's podcast, I think the circumstances this year, I know they were affected early part of the season. Scunthorpe didn't play, I don't think, for a couple of weeks or something. So, and if you look at that combined with the budget and the lack of real quality in that squad, I would suggest they'll persevere with him. And there's teams down the bottom of that division I see, in more trouble than Scunthorpe. I think they'll pick up enough results. I think we've spoken about Issa and Gillyhead has been two kind of shining lights in that side, but obviously need to find a few more goals because the tally suggests that unless that picks up, they're gonna be down the bottom.
Yeah, they lost Van Veen, didn't they? It's sort of a maverick. It's a natural sort of match winner for them. I think he's only made 3 starts and they won 2 of the matches that he started. So I think losing him was bad. What I'll say for Scunthorpe fans that are feeling really sort of miserable is that it's in their own hands in many respects. Stevenage, Southend and Grimsby all to come at home. So that might make or break their season, really. They did lose all of the corresponding away fixtures. So up against their rivals at the bottom, they've not done well. But that's an opportunity, isn't it, for them to get themselves out of this hole.
Final game we're going to focus on this week saw the points shared between Bolton and Cheltenham after goals from Alfie May and Owen Doyle. And we speak a lot about Bolton, Sam, but Cheltenham haven't won in the league since the start of December. What's happening with the Duff men?
I think some important absentees, Hussey and my former teammate Liam Sercombe, not been available. I think the most alarming thing is the lack of goals. 2 in the last 6 matches for a team that we spoke about last year having such an array of options in attacking areas. There's no one you can really bet your bottom dollar on notching at the moment. I think George Lloyd's had opportunities not scoring. Alfie May hasn't been as consistent as maybe we thought he would be at that level. So that's a big problem. And I was going to ask Clarkie this earlier, actually, but it escaped my mind. Losing points from winning positions is happening a lot. In the last few weeks, they gave up a lead, obviously, against Bolton, Stevenage in the previous home game, another home game against Bolton, the reverse fixture again, conceding late, and loads of last-minute goals as well. So just that game management combined with not extending their leads, not being potent enough going forward, and obviously leaving themselves liable to having points taken off them late on. So be an interesting game tomorrow night against Newport, because we know that Newport consistently this season have left it late to do the damage. So Cheltenham are going to have to hope that there are a couple of goals to the good, otherwise they could be burnt again.
Yeah, they've got one of the worst records when it comes to having a lead and holding on to it. They have scored the first goal in 14 games, but only converted 8 into victories. So they've sort of squandered 6. It's among the worst records. But yeah, I think they'll be fine. A big week as well, isn't it, for Cheltenham? They got Newport and then Manchester City to come. And in this game, by the way, they were lucky against Bolton. I thought Bolton swarmed all over them. So, yeah, I think they'll be very pleased with the point.
Yeah, and yet Bolton are in 17th position. Final question here comes from Martin Johansson on Twitter. If Adrian could save only one out of Stevenage and Southend from relegation, which would he save?
That's out of order. That is outrageous.
Got to be Southend though, hasn't it?
Well, nothing to do with my personal feelings, because I loved being at both clubs. But I would save Southend on the basis that they've always, in my lifetime, been a professional, you know, one of the 92. And I see Southend as being a team that should be yo-yoing between League One and the Championship, not even being in League Two. They should definitely be League One at the bare minimum, Southend. Whereas Stevenage, much smaller club, they've been in non-league and enjoyed it there. It wouldn't be as disastrous for them to drop out as it would be for Southend. But that said, I desperately hope they both survive. Thanks for that question.
Well done, Martin. Let's complete this doom DACA then. Both the chaps have gone for League Two fixtures from it. Sam, what's your pick?
Morecambe to beat Walsall, because I think Morecambe have won the last 4 at home, not lost since October, in fact, and at home that is, and Walsall just 1 point from the last 4. So after Morecambe's nice couple of trips to the capital, which yielded nothing, then defeats at Chelsea and Leyton Orient, get themselves back to the northwest and beat Walsall, or probably travel up on the day and be knackered.
Odds on that, Abby? The result, not Walsall travelling up on the day.
Well, Morecambe to beat Walsall is 11-8.
Adrian, what have you gone for?
Yeah, good odds that. I've gone for low scoring on the back of a very low scoring weekend. I'm looking at Tranmere and Forest Green. Forest Green, only 36% of their games have seen more than 2 goals. And for Tranmere, only 38% of their games have seen more than 2 goals. So under 2.5, please, for Tranmere, Forest Green.
Abby, what will you give us on that? What does it do to the ACCA?
Yeah, so under 2.5 is as likely as a Norwich win. So that is 4-7. Accumulator, therefore, is 18-1.
You can find these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18+. Be gamble aware. And when the fun stops, stop. Right, before we go, as it's just the dynamic duo with me today, we'll revisit no one's favourite quiz, loosely titled Stuff That Happened to Sam and Adrian in Their Playing Days. Adrian, you're up first this week. Here's your question. We all remember with fondness the goal that you plundered for Southend in the Shrimpers 2-1 win against Shrewsbury back in August 1998. In said game, a current EFL manager came off the bench for you in the 78th minute. Name that manager.
Oh, God, goodness me. 78th minute.
Real steal potential here if you don't get it, because I think this is dead easy.
Is it dead easy? I've got such a bad memory. I really have. I should know. Well, Nathan Jones?
Is correct. Yes. But yeah, bit of a dolly, that one.
Needed Abby to change the question during the podcast there, didn't we?
Yeah.
My goal in that game, by the way, can be seen on YouTube. It was quite a feeble effort, but it was the teammate flicked it up onto my thigh for me to knee into the air and then volley over the wall. So it was quite an unusual goal. But yeah, the goalkeeper definitely did me a favour.
We'll maybe try and get Nick to tweet that out from the Totally Show account, maybe. Sam, here's your question. Speaking of Luton, We're coming up to the 13th anniversary of your stoppage time equaliser for the Hatters against Leeds in a League One game. 11 minutes after you stepped off the bench in said fixture, Leeds made a striking sub of their own. The forward they brought on has scored at a World Cup, won domestic cups in England and Scotland, as well as lifting the now defunct UEFA Cup Winners' Cup. Name that striker.
For Leeds.
Yep.
No,
loads of family members also play football.
Rod Wallace.
Played for one of your old clubs.
No idea.
Rod Wallace wasn't playing in 2008, by the way.
It was a joke. No idea.
Oh, come on. I really think you can get this. Adrian, can you steal?
No.
Scandinavian.
Thomas Brolin.
Played for Rangers, played for Chelsea, played for Sunderland. I once made him a cup of tea. He has one
Tour
sugar
Andre
in it.
Flo.
Yeah. I honestly thought you'd have remembered that. He's like quite a big name. No, you're not like, hey, I'm sharing a picture of Tory Andre Flo.
I should have done because I think it was Dennis Wise. And I think he probably called me an obscenity when he saw me in the tunnel after the game, considering I'd notched the equaliser. So, yeah, I probably should have got the Chelsea connection.
That was fun. Right, that's it for today. Ali and George will be with you on Thursday following the midweek fixtures. We'll be back same time, same place next week. But for now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and by following at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places. Or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.